Hello everyone, I'm really happy today to be here with you because I have actually I am going to host a very important broadcast. We have a great guest today from Germany. I'm going to host this broadcast with the chief of the lawyers at the Foundation for the Defense of People's Rights and Freedom, Dominique Desjarlais, who is with
Hi,
us.
everyone.
As you know, Dominique Desjarlais did filed many lawsuits in order to stop the COVID-19 measure implemented by the Quebec government here in Quebec, Canada. And our guest today from Germany is a renowned lawyer and a well-known lawyer, especially many videos have been released on YouTube, talking about a special committee of investigation about this COVID-19 crisis. And his name is Dr. Reiner Fulmitsch. Dr. Fulmitsch, welcome to Quebec, Canada. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Well, Dr. Fulmitsch, I'm going to call you Reiner. Is that all right?
Of course, of
Oh,
course.
Reiner, it's going to be easier to go forward. So, what is very impressive after this famous committee? You said that the COVID-19 crisis is one of the greatest crime committed. This is a conclusion about the committee. One of the greatest crime known in the history of humanity. So this is a big. Just before you go on this subject, would be nice to know who is Reiner Fulmitsch, where does he come from, and what are his past and actual achievements as a lawyer?
Well, I am just one of many lawyers who are cooperating here on an international scale. I have made a number of videos, but so have many of my colleagues. Most of them were taken down by YouTube within a half an hour or so. But I suppose that only means that I have something to say. Well, I have been a trial lawyer for 26 years now. I'm admitted to practice law both here in Germany and in the state of California in the United States. My colleagues and I in this firm here have been specialized on representing consumers and small and medium-sized corporations against fraudulent corporations like VW, Deutsche Bank, and the world's largest shipping company, Kuehne and Nagel. We're suing them because of bribery. And in the course of this, throughout these 26 years that I've been going to court, I have come to learn that the power of these large corporations, plus the many people who are behind these corporations, who invest their money in these corporations, is enormous. It is so big that they not only influence politicians, but they also influence, through the politicians, the courts of law in this country. I learned this the hard way, more or less, when I fought, my colleagues and I fought against Deutsche Bank because the most incredible decisions were rendered on behalf of Deutsche Bank based on their lying to the courts. Any layperson would have immediately known that Deutsche Bank is lying to the courts of law, but some of the judges, not all of them, some of the judges simply copied what the defense attorneys on the side of the defendant wrote in their briefs. So that was kind of what prepared me for this corona pandemic. My colleagues and I kind of knew what this is all about, except, of course, none of us was prepared for the magnitude of this. This is not just one or two or three corporations. It's a whole bunch of corporations, plus the people who invested in them. This is a huge power structure. The good thing is that most of the people who are involved in this on the other side are trying to stay in the shades, trying to stay in the shadows so that people won't know who they are. But those who are out there, who can be held responsible for the blatant lies that they told the world's community. Those are the ones who we're going after, and I think we're making headway right now.
What's interesting that you did gather a lot of lawyers. You've been forming a network of lawyers, and I heard that probably Dominique will be invited to cooperate with this network. I thank you so much. Is that this network that did create the Committee of Investigation in summer 2020?
Not really. We started out, it is actually three lawyers here in Germany who got together and decided we have so many questions and it is so obvious that the government will not answer these questions. One of the questions is, by the way, who does our government work for? Do they work for us, the people, or is it some corporate interests that they now represent? And because we realized this is in the summer of last year, I was still in the United States with my wife and my dogs. We have a ranch in Northern California. And I realized that this government, the German government, will not give us any answers to any of our questions. The three most important questions are, of course, how dangerous is the virus? How much damage do the anti-corona measures do, both health-wise and as far as the economy is concerned? And how reliable is the PCR test? This is the third question is the most important one because everything, all the anti-corona measures, the lockdowns, the mask mandates, everything is based on the Drosten PCR test. So we started out asking these questions, didn't get any answers, and that's when we decided on July 10th of last year, that we will set up this Berlin Corona Investigative Committee. And ever since then, we have interviewed, I think, over 100 experts, internationally renowned experts from all over the world, including, for example, Dr. Mike Yeadon, the former vice president of Pfizer, but many others, professors of biology, economists, lawyers, of course, epidemiologists, virologists, et cetera, psychologists, because they play an important role here, yeah, et cetera, et cetera.
And what are the conclusions of this committee?
Well, the first question, how dangerous is this virus, is very easily answered in the meantime, because even the WHO, in accordance with the findings of one of the most quoted scientists in the world, Professor John Ioannidis of Stanford University, they have come to the conclusion that this virus is no more dangerous than the common flu. With an infection fatality rate of 0.14%, I think that's what the WHO says, or this is very recent from John Ioannidis, 0.15%. Now, of course, Once you get to this point, once you get to this answer, the first question is, what is this all about? I mean, if this is a virus just like the common flu, what's happening here? Is this really about health or is there something else going on? And the something else is really important because the second question was, how dangerous or how much damage do the anti-corona measures do? And it is so obvious that this is, as one German cleric pointed out on television, this is like World War III, except there's no open fighting going on yet. But it is destroying businesses. We're going to have millions and millions of bankruptcies of small and medium-sized businesses whose market share will probably be picked up by one of the corporations who we've been fighting, in this case, probably one of the platforms in Silicon Valley. Amazon is one example. But of course, health-wise, it's just as bad. I mean, there's suicide. The suicide rates are going up. Many people who do not get an operation, there's no surgical intervention in many cases because the German hospitals tried to keep reserved as many hospital beds as possible for all these hundreds of thousands of COVID patients who never materialized. We don't have any excess mortality in this country. And if you, upon closer examination, you'll find No one does. There are a few spikes. That's true. For example, in New York and Bergamo in Italy. But those spikes are definitely, this is what we learned from interviewing many, many Italian scientists and doctors and American doctors, most definitely caused not by COVID, but rather to a very large percentage by malpractice.
And you did identify some actors in Germany, well, in Germany and outside Germany. Could you identify the people who you believe are at the very heart of this fraud, of this crisis?
Yes, we had a chance to interview a few people who used to work for the WHO. And they told us that the whole crisis started here in Germany. We have a person by the name of Professor Dr. Christian Drosten. He works at Charité University Hospital in Berlin. He was instrumental in during the swine flu, which is 12 years ago. Same thing, same story, same actors. Turns out after a year, that was a mild flu. But 12 years ago, the WHO changed their definition of what a pandemic is. Before that, it used to be a disease that spreads worldwide, element number one, element number two, causing many serious illnesses, and element number three, causing many, many deaths. Then they changed that definition and cut out the two latter elements, and all of a sudden you can start a pandemic only when you have a disease that spreads worldwide. So basically any common flu can be made into a pandemic. And that's what they did with the swine flu in 2009 and 10, which eventually turned out to be a mild flu. But the only reason why it was possible to stop matters from getting any worse. I mean, they got worse. They got bad enough because even then they started to push vaccines as the only solution to that pandemic. But the only person who kind of stepped in and blew their cover is our friend Dr. Wolfgang Wodak, who was then in a position of power because he was both a member of the German parliament and a member of the Council of Europe. And he was able to expose this hoax, which it really was. But he was not able to keep the vaccines from getting bought by all those many of the member countries of the WHO at undisclosed, contractual contents are still undisclosed. It's being kept secret. So, but a lot of money was being wasted on vaccines then. And many people, and they use these vaccines on many people, not so much in Germany, but in other countries. And the result is that you have, I think, 1,300 children. I mean, they're not children anymore, but back then they were children, mostly from Scandinavia, who are permanently disabled because they suffer from narcolepsy. So that's the guy who started this whole thing this time again, Drosten. The other person who was involved is the president of the German RKI, Robert Koch Institute, which is the equivalent of the American CDC. His name is Lothar Wieler. He's a veterinarian. Strange choice for the head of the RKI. And then there's Mr. Tedros, who runs the WHO. Yeah. But there's lots of other players who we managed to identify, most of them politicians who are in very, very close cooperation with these guys. The thing is, by accident, we found a video I think it was of May 2019. It was called Global Health Summit. Yeah. And it was a video on a Congress that was being held by the German CDU, which is the Christian Democratic Union, which is the leading party in this grand coalition which rules our country currently. And the very bizarre thing is that at this conference, there were not just the functionaries, the leaders of the of that party, of the CDU, but there was also Drosten, there was Wheeler, there was Tedros, and the two chief lobbyists of the world's most important health foundations, the Wellcome Trust and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, were also there. The same people who, a little less than a year later, started the pandemic, the same people who are now the chief advisors of our government.
Oh, my God. So let's talk about law now. What is going to be made in order to protect the citizens of the of this world? You are going to cooperate with several lawyers from all over the countries, from all over the world?
There are a lot of lawyers out there who are working on this problem, but they have not been connected. And that's what I try to do. I try to put everyone on the same page so that we would all agree that it is important to attack at the very foundation of this pandemic.
Which is the PCR.
The PCR test. And not so much talk about whether or not lockdowns work or not. Of course they don't work. A very recent study, again by John Ioannidis, explains this in detail. They don't make a difference. I mean, if you look at the United States, look at two neighboring states, North and South Dakota. In South Dakota, they had nothing. In North Dakota, they had a tough lockdown. Still, the picture is the same. Nothing changes because of lockdowns. So the best way to do, attack or to tackle this problem, this whatever it is, virus, is to just let it run its course, just like with the common flu. Some of the states in the United States, including Texas and Florida, have opened up again. And what do you see? Nothing. Everything is cool. So we have decided, rather than getting lost in discussions about whether or not lockdowns make sense or mask mandates make sense, they don't. We know that from very recent expert opinions that were published by the Family Law Court of Weimar a couple of days ago, but we've known this all along. Rather than getting lost in such, in my opinion, fruitless discussions, we need to attack at the very foundation, and that's the PCR test. And again, we need to talk about Mr. Drosten, who is a very strange person. He calls himself a professor and doctor of virology. We know that he has never written what is called a habilitation thesis, which you usually do in order to become a professor of something. And it turns out that two scientists who try to find out who this person really is had to realize that his doctorate is probably a fake doctorate. Oh. Supposedly, he wrote his doctoral dissertation in 2002 or 2003. But it was never listed with the National Archives. It appeared there for the very first time in June of last year. And that's when, for the very first time, his doctoral dissertation all of a sudden showed up. And as his alma mater, which is Frankfurt University, says, well, we didn't have a copy of it, but we were so grateful for him to provide us with a copy. So. This is so bizarre. We think this guy's a fake, complete fake. But what he did is he's probably the poster boy for all of this. He is the here in Germany, and because of the WHO's recommending his PCR test all over the world, he is at the core of this. So if we manage to prove in a court of law that his two statements, that there's asymptomatic infections and that the PCR test can tell you about who is infected. If we manage to prove in a court of law that this is false, that these are false statements, we can prove he made them knowing that he was making false statements. If we manage to show in a court of law, and we just did that in the first case that was decided on April the 8th in a family law court, if we manage to prove this, the whole house of cards is going to collapse, because what do you need the notion, the idea of asymptomatic infections for? Well, up until Corona, everyone who didn't have any symptoms was healthy, right? Now you needed to get people to panic all over the world in order to direct their attention towards Corona so they wouldn't know that the real goal of this whole plandemic, as we now call it, is the destruction of the middle class, not just of the German middle class, but of the world's middle class. And in order to create panic, you have to make everyone afraid of everyone. And that's why he came up with the idea that they're asymptomatic infections. The rest of the world refers to him when they talk about asymptomatic infections. Fauci, for example, was talking about the German scientists when he was explaining about asymptomatic infections. And he meant, of course, his German counterpart, Drosten. And turns out there is no such thing as asymptomatic infections. A very recent study conducted in Wuhan, China, involving, I think, 10 million people, came up with the result that there's no such thing as asymptomatic infections. And in the meantime, even Fauci and others agree, even if there were asymptomatic infections, they would not play any role at all in this entire infectious disease theater. So, but you needed this notion, this idea to make everybody afraid of everyone. Plus, you needed this as a foundation for mass testing, because why would you test healthy people? You would only test people who are healthy or who look healthy without symptoms if you believe they are potentially dangerous. That's what asymptomatic infections are there for. And now the second part of his false statement is, of course, he knows that this is a false statement because when he published he wrote a preprint, he and a couple of other people wrote a preprint in, I think this was in February of 2020. And it came to the attention of another scientist by the name of Kai Kupferschmidt. In this preprint, he claims that there's asymptomatic infection. And he points, as an example, he points to a woman from Wuhan who traveled to Germany, to Frankfurt, Germany, and then on to Bavaria and infected a lot of people. And he says she didn't have any symptoms. Now, this scientist by the name of Kai Kupferschmidt says, no, you're wrong. She did have symptoms. She probably got infected because her parents had COVID, and she was taking anti-flu medication. You don't take anti-flu medication because it tastes so great. You take it because you want to fight the symptoms of something. So she did have symptoms. Nevertheless, he knew this, Drosten knew this, and he still published his paper. Second false statement is the one about PCR tests. In his Drosten PCR test protocol, again, it's something that he published with a bunch of others, but he's the guy who is at the forefront of this. He claims that he invented in early 2020, probably around New Year's Eve, when, keep in mind, at this time, he and all the others were telling the rest of the world, this is nothing problematic. Most people will probably not even realize this. This is just like, they won't feel anything. This is just like a mild flu. But still, precisely at that time, he was working on this PCR test. And he published his Drosten protocol, which was then recommended by the WHO to the rest of the world as the gold standard for detecting infections on March 23rd of, I think it was March 23rd of 2020. And in this paper, he claims that his test can detect infections. Now, he knew that this is wrong because 6 years earlier, he had given an interview to a German business magazine. This was in the context of the MERS virus, which is another strain of the coronavirus. And back then he said that his PCR test, or any PCR test for that matter, is not reliable because people, in this case, he was referring to a nurse, people who test positive may very well be perfectly healthy because their immune system is taking care of whatever virus may have attached to them. Now, why does the PCR test, why can it not tell you anything about infections? Well, that's simple. The inventor of the PCR test, Carey Mullis, who got a Nobel Prize for it, a very smart, very witty person who unfortunately died in August or September of 2019. He kept telling the world over and over again, this PCR test is a great tool in order to make things visible that the human eye otherwise can't see, but it cannot tell you about whether or not somebody is sick or infected. It cannot. Why? Because it cannot distinguish between live and dead matter. Or to put it in other words, you can only be infectious, meaning contagious for other people, if a virus, meaning a complete virus, not just a fragment, and that's all they test for, if a complete virus has entered your cells and starts to replicate there.
Yeah.
But that's also when you show symptoms. So that's the only way you can be infectious. However, the test cannot tell you whether a virus has entered your cells. The test, it tests positive for even the fragments or remnants of your body's immune system's successful fight against the common flu or against the common cold. So it cannot tell you anything about infections. Plus, the way that this that the Drosten PCR test was set up, it is completely useless because everybody agrees in the meantime that if the cycle of amplification or magnification, put it in other words, what you do is you take the swab, you cannot see what's on it because it's invisible to the human eye. In order to make it visible, you have to put it into a machine, and there you have to magnify it. And the cycle of amplification is really, really important. It goes 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, et cetera, et cetera. Everyone agrees that at a cutoff threshold of 24 cycles, it doesn't make any sense anymore. Beyond that, it doesn't make any sense anymore because it begins to test positive to everything. That's what Carey Mullis pointed out as well. You can make everything visible if you use this test. And everyone agrees now that's probably because of the work of Dr. Mike Yeadon, the former vice president of Pfizer, that at 35 cutoff threshold, you end up with at least 97% false positives. Now, the Drosten test, and his was the blueprint for all of the other tests, was set at 45 cycles of amplification. So what you end up with is probably 97, 99% false positives. But those who are behind this, those who are profiting from this scheme, the pharmaceutical and the tech industry and the financial industry, they're making lots of money with all these so-called infected people through the tests and now through the so-called vaccines, which, as we know, are not really vaccines.
Yeah, and I heard that the one test in Canada, it's $100 per test, and they test a lot, you know. And I would like to become more technical in terms of lawsuits. I will ask Dominique to take the lead for the questions. Dominique?
Hi, Reiner. It's always a pleasure talking to you. So thank you very much to participate to the this recording session. I've looked at what you've done in Germany. Can you explain, first of all, the legal recourse that you filed in Germany on behalf of Dr. Wardard against some what we call now fact checkers?
Yeah, that's, well, I'm glad I'm on your program, and I'm glad you're part of the legal team of lawyers on this international scale, because that's the only way to do it. What we did in Germany, once we understood that the basis for this entire scheme is the PCR test, is we started to attack the PCR test in the courts of law. Actually, because the situation is evolving, we're learning more and more every day. I just filed a brand new complaint. No, I didn't file it yet. I'm going to file it tomorrow, but I just wrote a brand new complaint that includes all the recent developments. Including the first decision on PCR tests that was issued by a Portuguese called the Portuguese Appellate Court. And it dealt with four German tourists. And one of them tested positive, and then they quarantined the whole bunch of them. The Portuguese court using the available information on the internet, available information, probably also talking to a number of scientists in their own country, came to the conclusion that PCR tests cannot be the basis for such decisions because PCR tests cannot tell you anything about infections. Second decision came down a couple of weeks ago by a Vienna, Austrian court. Again, it didn't hear any witnesses, but it came to the very same conclusion, only using harsher terms. The third and most recent decision is that was issued by a German family law court on April the 8th, and this is the first one that was actually based on the actual hearing of expert witnesses. Three expert witnesses were heard by this court. One of them is Professor Dr. Ulrike Kemmerer of Würzburg University, a biologist. And she's the one who testified before the Corona Committee. And we then decided that, plus others, I mean, she's not the only one. There's also Professor Capel from the Netherlands. There's Dolores Cahill from Ireland. There's Mike Eden, there's a bunch of other people who agree with this. And we decided that we're going to use these experts and make them available for all the lawyers who are willing to attack the reliability of the PCR tests. And the lawsuit that you mentioned, which I filed on behalf of Dr. Wolfgang Wodak, we filed this one at the end of last year when a group of so-called fact checkers, which we all know now they're not fact checkers, but they're paid to defame people who are not in line with the government line. We filed this lawsuit against this group of fact checkers because they claimed that Wolfgang Wodak was lying when he said the PCR test can't tell you anything about infections. Now, in the meantime, of course, even the WHO admits that a PCR test alone cannot tell you anything about infections. So we filed this complaint because we thought this is a cool kind of thing, not just because we needed to defend our friend Wolfgang Wodak, but also because the burden of proof, of course, when you attack someone for defamation, the burden of proof is on the other side. So now they have to prove that Wolfgang Wodak is lying, which is next to impossible. But at the core of this lawsuit is, of course, the PCR test. The second complaint I filed is for a business owner, filed it early this year. And again, it has at its core the PCR test. This one was filed against the defendant, Drosten. And the third one that's going to be filed soon is going to be against the defendant, Wheeler, who runs the German RKI.
And what the common thread of those three lawsuits is the PCR test, right?
Yes.
So what could come out of a favorable judgment in one of the three or all of the three lawsuits, and what could be the impact afterwards?
Well, if they come to the very same, if the courts that have to decide these cases, if they come to the same conclusion that the family law court in Weimar, Germany came to, or the Portuguese court, or the Austrian court, then that means, because the complaint is for damages, then it means that our clients will be able to collect damages. At the same time, and this is probably the most important aspect of this, since the facts of these cases, the fact that lockdowns destroy the economy and cause huge damages for business owners, they're the same all over the world because all of the lockdowns are based on the Drosten test, all of them. We know this because the two women who I mentioned earlier, who used to work for the WHO, explained to us in detail, and I'm including this in my new complaint, that the only basis for the anti-corona measures, for the pandemic, in fact, was the Drosten PCR test. To make this clear, I think what happened, let me make sure that I'm not going to tell you anything that doesn't make any sense, but I think what happened is that in early 2020, the WHO, and we have to keep in mind that according to what we've learned in the meantime through the interviews that we conducted at the Corona Investigative Committee, we have come to the conclusion that this is a planned pandemic. It was never about health, but according to what we learned, this has always been about shifting the remaining assets of the world's taxpayers to these huge corporations. But they've been planning for this for a long time. As I just pointed out, the first such attempt was the one with the swine flu, which didn't quite work out because of Wolfgang Boda. But in 2020, in the beginning of 2020, what happened is there was a meeting of the WHO shortly after the first such cases became that happened in Wuhan, China, became known to the world's public, to the general public. A group of people from the WHO, I think they call themselves the Emergency Committee, they met for the first time on January the 22nd and the 23rd. However, they didn't have any cases, or at least not enough cases to declare a pandemic. What happened then is, in the meantime, Drosten had supplied them with his PCR test protocol. And he did this actually before they even met on January the 13th. And then they started to use it. And when after the first failed attempt of declaring a pandemic or what do they call it? A public health emergency of international concern. After that first attempt failed, they met again 7 days later on March the 3rd. And in the meantime, the Drosten test had been used and gave the appearance as though there were many, 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 many cases of infections. Gave the appearance, because as I pointed out earlier, the PCR test cannot tell you anything about infections. And on that very basis, only on that basis, did the WHO then declare this, what is it called? The public health emergency of international concern. That was the basis also for the injections or vaccinations, whatever you want to call it, because only on this basis, on this declaration of a public health emergency of international concern, was it later possible to get the vaccines admitted. In the United States, this is called emergency use authorization. In Germany, in Europe, it's called conditional use. But you needed this public health emergency of international concern in order to be able to use these so-called vaccines. So that was the most important aspect of the whole thing. It all boils down that Drosten started this whole thing.
The lawsuit that you filed on behalf of Dr. Wardoy, at what stage is it rendered at right now? And what do you look at in terms of a timeline to get the court hearing?
Well, what happened is we quickly found out that parts of the judiciary have also come under the influence of the other side, as we now call them.
Germany, right?
Because this is quite unusual. In Germany, if you file a complaint with a court of law, the court will then take care of the service of process. It's different in the United States, probably in Canada too, I don't know. But the court takes care of serving the papers, serving the complaint to the defendant. And this usually happens within a week, 10 days, not much later. In this case, the other side, which had heard about the complaint because we had made it public, started writing in the mainstream media and telling the mainstream media that this is probably a fake story because the complaint, which I had been talking about and my colleagues had been talking about, had still not been served upon them. This is 2 months or 6 weeks or so after we had filed the complaint. Then my secretaries called the court and we were told the following story. Yes, well, we should have served this, but we made a terrible mistake because here in Germany, if you want to get a complaint filed, you have to pay the court expenses first, or else the court is not going to deal with this whole thing. So what the court told us, or told my secretaries, is unfortunately, the payment of the court expenses was somehow qualified as a final payment, which is usually made after the whole case is decided and the whole case is ended. That's when you make a final payment, and then the whole case is filed. So that's what they said. We made a mistake. We said, well, then correct the mistake. They finally did it, and then they served these papers, the complaint, to the other party, to the defendant. However, they're still stepping on the brakes because both this case and the other case that we, the complaint that we filed against Drosten, they are scheduled for a hearing on November the 9th, which is an unusually long period of time. But at the same time, it tells us that the other side is really worried about this because they know, of course, that they cannot win on this basis. Not now that even the WHO has agreed that the PCR test cannot tell you anything about infections.
Yeah. As you know, Reiner, I filed also on behalf of the foundation I represent a lawsuit. If you give me a few minutes just to talk about it, since sure. you were in the middle of talking about the different lawsuits that we both filed in our respective countries. One of the questions I asked myself very early on was about the PCR test. And at the core of my lawsuit, there's also the question of the PCR test. And as you know, there's been a team of 22 researchers, of which Michael Yudin was part, that debunked the what we call now the Corman-Drosten report that you talked about earlier. And one of my experts is Claire Craig. So I have an expert, Claire Craig was one of the 22 researchers working on the PCR test report that I will file in support of my lawsuit. Now, my lawsuit is covering the entire situation. Also, I attack the existence of an actual existence of a sanitary emergency right now based on the data that we've collected, that the governments have collected over the past year on the fatality rate, the mortality rate, that there's not really over mortality, that the people who are affected by COVID-19, because we don't deny that there's a virus existing, that COVID-19 is real, is that we're just attacking the proportionality and the rationality of the measures. And the data that we have here in Quebec is that 91% of the people who died or are related to deaths linked to COVID-19 are age 70 years or older. So it's really a specific portion of the population. Based on that, I'm attacking the existence of the sanitary emergency right now on the basis that there's no such emergency that still exists. Basically, what you all also explained, that the PCR test is creating case numbers, which are not sick people necessarily, and the science on this is pretty clear. And we're also attacking the constitutionality of the measures based on the fact that they are infringements of the Canadian Charter, right to liberty, right to security of the person, right to life, right to peaceful assembly, right to religion. So. And we're alleging that the measures, not only are they not rational, their object is not rational to what the aim is, that it's disproportionate, that it's illogical, but also that it's causing much more damages than the what we want to prevent. So what I reading lawsuits from all over the world, what I realize is that the fact pattern is the same. You know, like what you explained in Germany, we have the same fact and the same behaviors from the government, that and it's the same all over the world. So I think what you mentioned earlier, that to gather lawyers together is a good thing, because we can then cross check our information and share information share reports, share experts. And I salute you for all the videos that you did so far, because you're for me, I must say you're an inspiration.
Because if
look, we filed one of the biggest lawsuits in the world, as I explained, and I'm managing right now as 8 or 9 experts to file a report. So it's a lot of work. It's very stimulating, but people have to realize that the work that I do and the work that all the lawyers do all over the world is a huge task. It's beyond what we could ever imagine when we got into law school. And the reason why I'm doing what I do right now, you're one of the inspirations. So I just wanted to thank you for that, because people have to realize it takes a lot of courage to do what we do and to come forward and to keep fighting. And I'm very proud, and it's going to be a privilege for me to be part of the select group of lawyers that you decided to put together. And I really look forward to share ideas with you and to share. And I want people to know that you're a very available person, because once we connected, I want people to know that Reiner Fulmich is a very available person, because we communicate through a direct channel, and we've communicated together recently, and you've answered my questions quickly. And you've led me to some experts that I asked you about. And we exchanged, you sent me judgments. And so I want people to know that there's a real cooperation and work that we do together and we'll keep doing. And, you know, if I can put you in touch with some people, and you can put me in touch with some people, and we can put lawyers in touch with all the people, I think that's the way we're going to go through this. Yes. All together, because alone in our office is one thing, but with a group of lawyers working together to share all this information, I think it makes us much more powerful. So again, I just want to thank you and salute you for what you're doing, and for the fact that you've accepted that we work as a team on this whole thing in our separate countries, but cooperating with exchanging information and contacts. And I wanted to ask you the following question. What do you see in terms of, okay, you file lawsuits in Germany, I file lawsuits in Quebec, some lawyers have filed lawsuits in the United States, and there's lawyers elsewhere in Canada. But once we do this, what can we hope to be able to do at the international level?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for all that praise. That's a little too much, because we all know we can only do it together. One of us alone will not be able to solve this problem. So that's a sheer necessity to cooperate with people who are smart enough and who you can trust. And that's what's happening all over the world right now. Ultimately, if we have enough of such decisions, the ones that I just mentioned by the Portuguese court, by the Vienna court, and now by the German court, it'll be enough to take those who are behind this to hold them responsible in the courts of law, because ultimately it's not going to be possible to recover all the damages or all the damage that was caused by Drosten, who is probably just a marionette for those who are pulling his strings, for those who are profiting of this screen. It's not going to be possible to recover all the damage from these individual peoples. People. Rather, we're going to have to get to those who are behind this, to the really what the Americans call the deep pockets. And those are the large corporations who are currently making billions of dollars, and who have apparently no empathy whatsoever, because they can see that people are dying, that people are killing themselves because they're frightened, because they're panicking. So ultimately, what we're going to have to do is file, and our friend and colleague Michael Swinwood has done so, as he explained to me, file in the Anglo-American legal system class actions, or this is another alternative. We may have to come up with a separate international court of law simply for the purpose of dealing both with the criminal and the civil law side of this, well, of these crimes against humanity, because that's what it boils down to. We may have to set up such a court. We've been talking to some of our colleagues about this, and I think this is beginning to come into existence.
Yeah, in terms of a timeline, how soon can you see this happening?
It may happen overnight, but I think it's going to take a couple of more weeks, not much longer, because we're probably going to have another international lawyers meeting very, very soon. And if we then agree, this is probably going to be live streamed. And if we then manage to agree on a course of action that includes the creation of a brand new international, let's call it Corona Criminal and Civil Court, well, I don't think it's going to take a long time. We're going to be talking to our colleagues in Sweden, in Canada, in the United States, Australia, Great Britain, and we're going to ask them for suggestions for people who, for lawyers, who could be judges on such a court and prosecutors, just like what happened some 75 or 80 years ago in the first so-called Nuremberg trials.
That's right. So this is what you call the Nuremberg 2.0, is it?
That's why I called it that. But I haven't really done anything with it. I just came up with the idea because it is a natural or logical consequence of what is happening here. I mean, these are, I think everybody agrees on this, crimes against humanity because of this humongous destruction, because of the immeasurable damage that is being done, and because of the, as I said, complete lack of empathy of the other side. So that compares with what happened then, we think, and many of the people who we interviewed people from Israel and people who from other countries who are Jewish, they all said, do not forget, don't just avoid this, but look at the parallels between what happened in 1933 and what's happening now. And we have taken that to heart. And since everybody calls these crimes now crimes against humanity, and this expression was formed in 1946 when, because of the Nazi crimes, they set up the Nuremberg trial.
Wow. This gives hopes to people, you know, to hear that justice may be possible in such a hoax that you know, as you told us, it's one of the greatest crime in history against humanity. So thank you so much, Reiner. I don't know if Dominic has...
I have a very important question because, you know, we talk about
legal side,
we talk about lawsuits, but you know, one aspect of the picture, but I think the bigger aspect of the picture, and I've discussed this with Reiner, so I'm interested for the people to hear what he has to say. You know, after, you know, we're doing the work we have to do, Reiner, because that's what we were trained for. That's what we are armed to do and, you know, determined to do. But how do you see an end to all this? Or how do you see the way to get out of the labyrinth, the maze that we've been launched into since the past year? This COVID COVID-19 maze, you know?
I think it's probably not enough for us lawyers to file lawsuits. We have to continue, all of us, we have to continue with our work of making what is going on as transparent as possible, to educate the people about what's happening. I know, of course, that there are a lot of people out there who still don't fully understand what's going on. However, more and more people are beginning to ask questions because they don't understand. Some of the measures don't make any sense. It's so obvious that they're contradictory. For example, in the state of Bavaria and maybe in some other states here in Germany as well, they now have a curfew. Now, what does that mean? You cannot go outside after 9 p.m. What does that mean? Does that mean the virus becomes dangerous after 9 p.m. and before that it's harmless? Or if you want to go to a restaurant, most restaurants are closed right now. But if you go to a restaurant, when you sit down and eat, of course you can't wear a mask.
You take off your mask, of course. Yeah.
But when you go to the bathroom, you have to wear a mask. I mean, none of this stuff makes any sense. And that's another big problem, because this is part of their psychological operation. What they're trying to do is to not just keep us in panic mode, because that's the only way they can keep us under control, because as you know, we're many, many more than the other side. Plus we probably have the smarter people. We have the people who have, as one of the professors of psychology explained to us, who have moral competence. Moral competence means that you're capable of asking questions rather than just blindly following orders, and that you're capable of discussing other opinions rather than just shooting the other person simply because he has a different opinion from your own. But what this boils down to is that the narrative, which is currently one of complete panic, this narrative has to be changed. But who's in charge of the narrative? It's the mainstream media. And the very same people who invested their money into the pharmaceutical and tech industry invested much of their money in the mainstream media to keep them under control and to make them repeat their narrative over and over and over again, which is completely false. It doesn't make any sense. But it's still there. And one of the psychologists who we interviewed said, doesn't make a difference whether or not the picture that they're drawing is not perfect. It may be even shitty. Doesn't make a difference. As long as the picture is out there, it impresses people. So we're going to have to do something. We're going to have to keep educating the people by not confronting them or getting angry at them. That doesn't work at all. But we have to keep our hand extended so that if one or two or three or even hundreds of people want to take our hand and want to talk to us, we are able to explain what's really going on. It's a very, very serious point in time, very dangerous, but we are making progress. We are making progress, and more people are beginning to wonder. And that's important.
You believe that, Reiner?
Just to reassure you, Reiner, just to reassure you, you have a curfew. We have had the curfew since last January in Quebec. And we're right now the only place in North America with a curfew. And I filed a lawsuit, a judicial review, a habeas corpus that was turned into a judicial review late January to quash the curfew. The case is still ongoing, but we had that measure. And yesterday, just to let you know, we have these kinds of incoherent measures and illogical measures. Yesterday, they imposed on the people to wear a mask. If you're not from the same household and you want to do an outdoor activity, you need to wear a mask in Quebec right now. So people are under that sense of fear that's ongoing, and the mainstream media is perpetuating the fear, and the government is perpetuating the fear. And the mask is one of the symbols to keep the fear going.
Yes. Yes. It's a symbol of obedience. But here's the good news. I think 3, 4, 5, maybe 6 courts in the meantime here in Germany have decided that these curfews are illegal. They're unconstitutional because they don't make any sense. They're not based on any factual evidence whatsoever.
Yeah. So what's the status right now in Germany? Because I read a few days ago, despite the decision that was rendered on April 8th, I read that the German government wants to put out some more strict measures, right? Am I correct?
Yeah, well, the government has decided, Angela Merkel has decided that she's going to be in complete control, and she wants to be able to govern the individual states as well. I mean, this is a federal republic. It's a federal system. But she's trying to gain complete control. However, she's making a big mistake, because not just many of the professors of law, many of them came out last year even explaining this, the whole thing is completely unconstitutional. It's null and void. None of these measures have any factual basis. But now the people, and even people in her own party, are beginning to realize that she's completely out of control, or the people who are pulling her strings are completely out of control. But she's in big trouble, and it shows. Even if you just look at her, it shows. She's under a lot of pressure. That's probably because the other side has forced themselves into an early start. We have learned from a whistleblower that this whole scheme, this whole Great Reset, or whatever you want to call it, was originally scheduled to happen much later. And then they pulled it forward in time from 2050 or so to 2030. And then they got, as this whistleblower explained to us, even greedier and pulled it forward to 2020. And that's a little too soon, because not everything was in place that they needed. And that's our biggest chance.
Yeah.
And do you see a shift in the people's mood or the people's awareness in Germany right now? Because we talk about, you know, people who realize what's going on. They never go back. Because I asked when I was in Stockholm, I asked Michael Yeadon, what's your hope? And he said, well, one person who becomes aware of what's going on never goes back to what she was thinking before. So do you see that shift happening more quickly right now in Germany? And
yes.
How do you see it happening?
Yeah, I think it is happening, not just in Germany, but in particular in Germany. And I think people have begun to understand, people who are on our side have begun to understand that we play a pivotal role in this whole pandemic. If we manage to stay on our feet, if we manage to not allow them to bring us to our knees, and we definitely will, then the rest of the world will know it is possible to fight this thing. And this feeling is spreading throughout Europe. More and more people in Italy, in France, in Austria, for example, are sick and tired of what's going on. Some of them are simply sick and tired, but many of them are asking questions, and they're looking to the not to the mainstream media, because they know they're part of this evil plan, but rather they're looking to the alternative media for information. And that's what they get there. It is, they're beginning to understand that the rationale that's behind this is to gain complete control over us, so that we won't understand that the other side, the so-called self-appointed political elites and the self-appointed corporate elites, which meet every year on the occasion of this World Economic Forum. This is an important platform for them. People are beginning to understand that they're the ones who have been, stealing, embezzling, I don't know what you want to call it, our assets for at least 20 or 30 years, maybe longer. And the other side knows that many of us have understood this, and they don't want to be blown out of the water, so to speak. And that's why that's probably another reason why they pulled this corona pandemic forward as far as the timeline is concerned. So people do realize that they have to do something, and people do realize that they have to come up with their own idea of what a great reset, if you want to use that term, should look like. It's the people. It's not those. It's the people who should do this bottom up, not these private congregations of very, very rich people like the WEF, like the WHO, should tell us how our lives should be lived. It should be bottom up and not top down. That's what democracy is all about. We have to reinstall democracy.
Well, Rainer, it's been lovely to have you with us in Canada. And I would like you to maybe to close this meeting with a word that I love. And this word is hope. minutes. You go ahead.
Well, the thing is, we've come a long ways. When we first started out working on this problem, meaning right after we set up the Corona Investigative Committee in Berlin, we had absolutely no idea of what we were getting ourselves into. Now that we understand the magnitude, we probably don't understand everything, but we understand the magnitude and the seriousness of the problem. Instead, however, of panicking or allowing them to keep us in panic mode, we have, at least the lawyers, but many others as well, have come to their senses and are beginning to use our capacities, including what this professor of psychology explained to us, our moral competence. And that's simple. I mean, you just begin to ask questions and then you find the answers. On the basis of these answers, you have to find the appropriate response. And that's what we did. We found the appropriate response. And just as Dominique pointed out, it is massive attacks on the legal front, on an international basis, combined with ongoing efforts to educate the people. And of course, there's another level to it, which has only become clear to us over the last couple of weeks or so. It's not just the rational thinking and the rational work of attorneys that will get us out of this, but there's also I don't know what you want to call it, a spiritual level that plays a huge role in this. That's why I'm pretty grateful to be cooperating also, of course, with Dominique, but also with Michael Swinwood of Canada. He's from Ontario. He's been representing the natives, not just in Canada, but also in the United States and in South America. And he added this additional level, spirituality. Some people call it religion, but I don't care what you call it. This is an existing level which many of us were, I guess, separated from because of the wrong ways in which we are used to living our lives. We have to return to this as well. We have to return to rationality, democracy, but we also have to become aware of this spirituality level. And then we will win. There's no doubt about this.
Wow. Yeah, I've been telling people, Reiner, that they have to take their power back. And this is exactly what you've said, you know. Mm-hmm. So you and I are on the same level on this, and we've talked about it. And I look also forward to work with Michael Swinwood, whom I talked to through you. So again, I thank you very much, Reiner, for taking this time. It's been a privilege, and it's going to be a great honor and privilege to keep working with you. I know I give you a lot of praise, but I want you to know you totally deserve it.
Oh, it's a little too much, but I know that this is, of course, this is motivating, and I know we will do this together. We will win this together, all of us.
Yes. Danke schön. Thank you so much. Merci, Dominique.
Thank you very much, Reiner.
Merci d'avoir été présent, chers amis. Thank you, everybody, for being present. It was a great meeting, full of hope. So thank you so much. Gentlemen.
De rien.
See you soon.
Talk to you later. Talk to you soon, Reiner.
Have a great day.
Yeah, salut. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.